Sports Wire. My name is Chris Reardon, alongside my co-host Dan McHugh, and we are back for yet another episode, episode 3. Dan, how you doing, buddy?
Episode 4, actually.
Wow, I'm losing track of time here in Moscow. Yeah, episode 4, and certainly, I guess, good times and bad times for DMV Pigskin. Got plenty to talk about that. We have two Ravens matchups to talk about. We have some Redskins, depressing topics to talk about, but we will still talk about them nonetheless. We have some DC United news, a little Washington Wizards news, and even some Washington Nationals news. So probably no college sports yet again this week, but that will certainly become more important as we close out other seasons. And, of course, actually, one of the most exciting things of the week, some Washington Capitals news to talk about.
Yes.
So, got a jam-packed show for you, and I guess we won't waste any more time and just get underway. So, Dan, I think, you know, normally we start with the Redskins, but let's start with the Ravens because they are the only team from the DMV still alive in the football scene. And two wins in a row now, heading to a second consecutive AFC Championship game. Very exciting stuff. I will continue to say that John Harbaugh has done a tremendous job there in Baltimore. Joe Flacco is proving that his critics shouldn't be too tough on him because the guy just keeps winning in the playoffs.
Absolutely. And it's been an emotional playoff run this time with Ray Lewis announcing his retirement. We'll get into more of that, I think, you know, because I think we should talk about the legacy of Ray Lewis and what he means to Baltimore and what he means to football. And, you know, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer without question.
And, no question there.
And, you know, I know that since he announced his retirement, I've been pretty emotional. Like, you know, it was just sad to see. It's sad to hear. He's such a great player. And, yeah, what a great game last night against Denver.
Before we get into that game against Denver, let's briefly talk about the Colts. And it is a little bit like old news, so we won't spend too much time on it. But I think one of the key things we talked about with the Ravens was that they started off the year fantastic. Had a lot of people picking them as a potential Super Bowl winner. And then kind of went through a dip in form, which did include a late loss to the Washington Redskins. But then came back in the penultimate game of the season with a just destructive – destructive for the Giants anyways, win over the G-Men, and that was fantastic to see the Ravens get back on track. They lost their final game of the season, but as we mentioned last week, it really didn't matter. They had already locked up the AFC North. They had nothing to play for. They couldn't have moved up a seed in the playoffs. So, they lost the game to the Bengals, but the starters didn't really play. So.
Yeah.
One of the things we've repeatedly talked about since starting the show is that the Ravens, while their defense isn't bad, they're not the defensive juggernaut that they once were, and often the offense has carried them. And when they weren't playing so well, it's when the offense had kind of stalled. We mentioned that a key to this game was feeding the ball to their best player, which is Ray Rice, and they certainly did a lot of that. Ray Rice ended up with 130-plus rushing yards, but it was also a fantastic performance by Joe Flacco. Didn't necessarily have a high completion percentage, but he threw for over 300 yards and hit a number of big plays, especially to Torrey Smith out of the University of Maryland. So let's talk about the Colts game a little bit. Like I said, I wouldn't say we knocked the defense, but we did acknowledge that they weren't as strong as they once were, but the defense came up huge in their performance against the Colts. And I think it's in no short order that Ray Lewis had a big reason. Was a big reason for that because, he's the leader of the team in general, but he's also the kind of quarterback on the field of that defense. And I think he just inspired his team. And he's the kind of guy that not only does he play well, Dan, but he demands a lot out of his teammates.
Yeah.
And he is kind of like Magic Johnson was in basketball and Michael Jordan in basketball. He's a guy that makes other players around him play better. Not only his performance, but he enhances the performance of the entire defensive unit.
Always.
And the Ravens came up huge in that game.
Yeah, and, you know, again, going in, I think that they were playing much better because of Ray Lewis announcing his retirement. I think they wanted to win it for him, and they don't, you know. So there's more to play for, you know. And Ray played great. He had 13 tackles. He looked good. He looks a little like robotic Ray. We were joking because he's got like this brace on his arm, and he's got this like, you know, his face mask is all like extra bars and stuff. He looks like robotic Ray or something. But you know, it was good to, you know, it's good that he's back, and it's good the Ravens won. I mean, I don't know, that was a good game. Yeah, that was not much, you know, they shut down the Colts pretty much on offense. Colts only scored 9 points that game. So
they essentially neutralized Andrew Luck. Yeah. So that was the key for the Colts. I mean, he's the reason why the Colts were able to make the playoffs this year, and it was his first playoff game. Certainly not his best performance, and the Ravens D came up big, forcing turnovers, getting key stops, and like you said, just kind of slowing down that Indianapolis Colts offense. The offense was good. They maybe weren't as good as they were in the Broncos game, but they were very solid. And you know, I watched the speech that Ray Lewis gave to the team beforehand, and he basically said, "Look, we're playing at home here. This is going to be Ray Lewis's last home match." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Hey, this team isn't ready for us," and it was very true. The Colts were not ready for the Baltimore Ravens. But let's move forward and talk about the game against the Denver Broncos. Which, look, let's be honest, the Broncos were on a roll. They were playing at home. They had won 11 in a row, and I think they were the Vegas favorite to win the Super Bowl. Well, I guess that's not happening anymore.
Yeah.
Fantastic game last night. Yeah. I think if you watched it, in the last 3 minutes, it certainly seemed like the Ravens might struggle to pull it off. They had the ball with, 5 minutes left, and you figured, okay, this might be their last chance. They ended up not getting a critical first down they needed, had to punt the ball away, but then the defense came up huge, made a big stop on 3rd and 7, got the ball back with, I think, just over a minute, and Flacco hit another big play.
Yeah.
And he was bombing all game. I mean, he was making a lot of critical third down throws. He was very poised in the game and hit a lot of big plays over the top. So this is a Ravens team that had, I think they wanted to install this offense for a long time, and it seems like they've finally come forward. And it's no longer the Ravens team that's dominated by defense and running the ball. They certainly have a good running game, but they can pass as well.
Yeah. And was it Torrey Smith? He had some big plays in the game, and he kept burning Champ Bailey. Champ Bailey got burned several times by Torrey Smith. We were making jokes that, you know, good to see Champ, I guess, former Redskin and all. But, yeah, I think Champ is probably his prime is done. He ought to retire, to be honest. He looked terrible in that game. Torrey Smith was burning him left and right.
Well, Torrey Smith is incredibly fast.
Yeah.
We know he's got big play potential, and he certainly proved it time and again for the Ravens. But, yeah, Champ Bailey, I agree, Dan. He's not there was several years where Champ Bailey was hands down the best cornerback.
Yeah, but, you know, age and time, that's what happens, unfortunately, to players. You know, they get slower and older and injuries. And so, I mean, no real knock on Champ, except, you know, maybe it's time to retire. I don't know. He's been in the league for a long time.
Champ Bailey's a class, and I was sad to see him leave the Redskins, but I'll always have respect for the guy. You know, we did end up getting Clinton Portis out of that deal, and that worked out pretty well for us.
Yeah, I think Denver got the better deal in that, though, personally, because Champ's still playing and Clinton isn't, so.
True, but the Redskins' two previous playoff runs before this year, you can attribute it in large part to Clinton Portis.
Well, that's true. I guess I'm just being said, you know, the last 2 years with Clinton were pretty bad, where he just was not playing hardly and was hurt all the time. But you know,
true.
Yeah.
Remember, Clinton Portis is the before this year, when Alfred Morris broke the record, was the single season record holder for the Redskins rushing yards in the season. So,
that's true.
So I don't have anything bad to say about Clinton Portis. I think he did give the franchise his all. He certainly changed his running style when he played here. He was used to what Mike Shanahan has installed now, the zone blocking scheme. If you look back, they were asking Portis to not use so many stretch plays, but more grind it up the middle, and he fought hard. So I got nothing bad to say about Clinton Portis. And he certainly brought color to the locker room with his Sheriff Gongitcha and some of the other
Southeast Jerome and I don't know and all that. Yes, yes.
So
gotta be commend Joe Flacco for what he just played lights out in the two games. You know, 18 for 34 yesterday, 331 yards, no interceptions and 3 touchdown passes. I mean, just a solid performance by Flacco. You know,
he did not make mistakes, Dan, but he made the crucial plays that this team needed. And look, to be fair, sometimes it was just him putting the ball up and giving Torrey Smith a chance to make a play, and Torrey Smith certainly did that.
Yeah, absolutely. Smith had 2 touchdowns, 3 and 98 yards. Pretty impressive.
And attack for the Ravens. rushing for over 130 yards, passing for over 300 yards. Defense got some crucial turnovers against Peyton Manning. And I got to say, you know, Peyton Manning's had a great year, but he looks like a different quarterback to me, Dan. If you notice his feet in the pocket, he seems to dance around a lot more. His feet move a lot now. He almost seems a little skittish at times.
Well, you know, they call it getting happy feet, I think, when they get older. And, you know, he's older. He's, you know, his neck, he's still worried about his neck, I'm sure. He doesn't want to get hit, so he's going to try to avoid getting hit, you know. I mean, yeah, the younger Peyton Manning said, okay, I'll take the hit, whatever. So, I mean,
Sorry to interrupt.
No,
I was going to say, defensively, as good of, as you know, important as Ray Lewis was, and as good as the team was overall, Corey Graham came up huge with a couple interceptions in this game. He was certainly a big reason for the Ravens' win as well. And it was just a great comeback. I really didn't see it happening. It was a very tight game. And in the past, let's be honest, Peyton Manning has been a Ravens killer.
Yeah, this is the first time he's lost to the Ravens in 18 games or something. He had like an 18-0 record against the Ravens. So
very good to see that, and we'll find out later on tonight who the Ravens will be facing in the AFC Championship game. It could be a rematch of last year's AFC Championship game if the Patriots can pull it off against the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, if I was a betting man, and I'm not, but, you know, I would definitely bet the farm on, you know, on New England. I think that, you know, it's hard to beat Tom Brady in Foxborough in January, so I think the Patriots should win this game, but, you know, that's why you play the game. See what
so
happens.
If that, and what kind of chances do you give the Ravens against the New England Patriots if that rematch does happen?
I think they got a shot, but you know it's going to be tough. It's always tough to. It's been done. Brady's been beaten in Foxborough in the playoffs. It's happened, but it doesn't happen often. So I think again the one thing that's driving the Ravens I think is Ray Lewis's retirement. So I think these guys really would like to try to win it for Ray. I think so. Hopefully, that could be the fact. You know, they could want it. You know, it comes down to who wants it more, and maybe the Ravens want it more because they're more hungry right now than the Patriots, who are just accustomed to winning year after year, Super Bowls and AFC championships, and you know, you kind of become entitled, or you know, or so. But
you know, Ed Lewis is retiring, Dan. You know, I'm still a little surprised to see Ed Reed because we heard some rumblings at least last year, the year before, that he was thinking about hanging up the boots in the near future.
I'd say I wouldn't.
Yes, cleats, we should say.
I wouldn't be surprised if he hangs it up, you know, this year, after this year. If they win a Super Bowl, I mean, maybe that would be a good time to walk away, you know, but I guess time will tell with that. I mean, he you know, he's slowed down over the years with injuries, too. And my guess, the Ravens, you know, at this point, they definitely need to start looking towards the future, you know, with their defense. They definitely need to draft a linebacker, obviously, with Ray Lewis retiring. And
you could never replace Ray Lewis, you know
no,
what I mean?
Not,
but
no,
you have to find someone to fill that void.
Yeah. No, there will never be a replacement of Ray Lewis. He is the greatest player to ever suit up in the purple and black. He is an icon at this point. He's a legend. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. They will retire his number. They'd probably build a statue of him or put it right next to Johnny Unitas at M&T Bank Stadium, right where it belongs. He deserves all those accolades. And there'll never be another player in Baltimore like Ray Lewis, in my opinion. And
it's definitely going to be sad to see him go, but we do know for sure that he's going to – well, I guess he always leaves everything he has on the field. But knowing this is, you know, his last run – I think the team is going to be emotional. He's certainly always emotional. And I wouldn't put it past the Ravens to make a special run. Like I said, I'm not going to lie and say I'm a Ravens fan. I'm a Redskins fan. But, hey, Redskins are out. Why not root for the Ravens? And I'd love to see Ray Lewis go out on a positive note. So
I mean, listen, and you know, some of the stats to go to, you know, highlight his Hall of Fame career. He's a 13-time Pro Bowler, 7-time all first team Super Bowl champion, obviously, 3-time Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, you know, just total career total of 2,050 tackles, 41 quarterback sacks, 31 interceptions, 17 years in the league with one team. You know, what else can you say except just phenomenal, you know?
Yeah, and he almost added another playoff interception in that game against the Colts. He let an easy one slip through his fingers, but, hey, they won the game.
Yeah.
I think in the end, that's really all that matters to Mr. Lewis and the Baltimore Ravens. And, you know, Ray Lewis does all that stuff on the football field, Dan, but He does even more, like I said, when you talk about how he makes players around him better and just the inspiration he is for that team, the heart and soul of the Purple and Black.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of like his speeches and tributes and stuff online since he announced his retirement. The man is he definitely can motivate, and he certainly he's a great speaker. You know,
I think he certainly has a history in the broadcasting booth. Should he want it, or you know, on let's get rid of Dion or Michael Irvin and replace him with Ray Lewis. How does that sound?
I would like that, to be honest, because I can't stand Michael Irvin. You know, and I think Ray, I have so much more respect for someone like Ray Lewis than Michael Irvin, who I just despise.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, let's move on to the Redskins. And look, it's depressing. It's sad. But in the end, you got to take a step back and look at the bigger picture. This team has, I think, a lot of high hopes for the future. Now, of course, some of that's tied to RG3 staying healthy. But look, I don't think any of us expected a playoff run this year, much less after the team started 3-6. So it was a pleasant surprise, and I was happy to just be in the playoffs. Now, in the end, you still don't like going out that way. And, you know, I officially cannot stand the Seattle Seahawks. Three consecutive times these guys have knocked us out of the playoffs. So, to me, in my mind, they're the biggest rival outside of the NFC East we have right now because I want to get revenge for that. It's just frustrating. And, look, I said last week, you know, I took the high road. I said I have respect for Seahawks fans. But let me tell you, and it's not all of them. They have some good fans, but they were talking massive trash before the match. And after the match, they were talking massive trash. You couldn't believe some of the things I was reading at NFL.com and some of the other forums. It was ridiculous. To me, you know, I said, okay, there's a way to be a graceful loser, but how about being a graceful winner as well for these fans? I mean, come on. If the Redskins had won that game and their playoff run was still alive, I'd be so happy that I wouldn't, I don't know, I'd be feeling so positive that I wouldn't need to spread negative energy and talk a bunch of crap and rub it into the face of the losing team. I'd be too happy to be that negative.
I wouldn't be negative towards anybody that plays for Seattle. I don't have a problem with Russell Wilson. You know, he's actually from the DMV area. He's actually from Richmond originally. So, you know, the only person I got a problem with on that team is I talked about last time was the coach. What's his face? Pete Carroll, who I don't have any respect for, but that's because I think he's just a dirtbag that, you know, he left USC during a scandal. Jumped to the NFL, so he avoided the avoided that whole thing with Reggie Bush getting a car. You know, I was talking a lot of trash at the television, like, you know, hey Pete, where's Reggie's car? Where's Reggie's car, Pete? You know, and of course everybody looked at me like I was crazy. But anyway,
and look, on Russell Wilson, Dan, I agree with you. I have a lot of respect for the guy. I think he's going to be a fantastic quarterback. He's already playing lights out, and I think it'll be interesting to see the NFC Championship game. Well, I guess we don't know if Seattle's going to qualify for that, but there's a potential they could play the 49ers, who they absolutely destroyed a couple weeks ago. I really respect Russell Wilson, but the Seahawks fans are irritating me.
Oh,
one of the trash talking points that has been going on is the need to justify, oh, Russell Wilson's way better than RG3. The Skins are so stupid. They gave up so much to get RG3, you know, a couple first round draft picks and some other draft picks. Yeah. Just to get RG3 and all the, you know, we got Russell Wilson later. We didn't have to give anything up, and he's a better quarterback. And I'm just like, you know, why does it have to be? I understand that Andrew Luck and RG3 get a lot of the hype, but I think a lot of people have gone out of their way to say, a lot of pundits, that this is the best quarterbacking class possibly in NFL history in one season for rookie class. Mm-hmm. And come on, man, you know. Why can't RG3 and Russell Wilson just both be good quarterbacks? Why do these Seahawks fans feel a need to attack RG3 and call him overrated, and he's not, you know, not really as good as everybody said he is, and people are already writing off his career saying the guy – and this is a fair point. The guy does – you know, RG3 needs to be a little more careful because our future is closely tied as Redskins fans to RG3. Mm-hmm. But why does it have to be such a – why do they need to prove that Russell Wilson's better? I mean, it's kind of like sour grapes to me. Okay, look, why can't they just both be good quarterbacks? It's not like these people are saying.
Why can't they be, like you said, why can't they be happy that they won? And, like, I wouldn't, like you were saying, I wouldn't care about talking trash about the Seahawks and to their fans after that win. I'd be thrilled that we won, you know? So I get your point there.
The comparison to RG3 and Russell Wilson, I get it. But it's not just that they're comparing the two. They're almost, a lot of them, from what I've read, are out to attack RG3 and act like he's He's nothing. Why can't you just praise both of them? I understand respecting your quarterback, but you don't need to attack RG3 and say, I don't know. I've read a lot of nasty things Seahawks fans have said about RG3 just because, you know, they obviously want their guy to win the rookie of the year. That's fine. But you don't need to sit there and attack someone else. Why not just let them both be good?
Especially since RG3 is not a bad quarterback at all. I mean, his stats were very good this year. And, I mean, you know, we won 7 games in a row to get in the playoffs. And a lot of that had to do with RG3. And
look, let's talk a little bit about the game, Dan. Jumped out to a 14-0 lead. I think at that point, most of Redskins Nation was feeling pretty good and thinking, okay, you know, we got this one. But the Seahawks stormed back, had a fantastic final three quarters. And bottom line is, look, if you look at the last 4 games for the Redskins to finish off their regular season run, they actually fell behind early in all of those. So we've been a team that have saved our best for the end of the match, typically, over the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. And this match, we jumped out to an early lead. They were our 2 best offensive possessions in the game and kind of regressed from there. And, look, I know the big talking point that everybody's going to talk about is Mike Shanahan leaving RG3 in. And I'm not going to say that the discussion is not valid and questioning him is not valid. I think it was good that RG3 started the game. I think you at least had to try it out. And obviously, in the early going, it panned out. 14-0 lead. But I think as the match wore on and he took some licks, you could see that he was getting worse.
Yeah.
As far as the pain level and performance. And bottom line is, at that point, I do agree. I think Kirk Cousins probably should have been
RG3 had to go back into the locker room, you know, during the game. And you check out, that should have been it. Like, he shouldn't have gone back in my opinion. And
I think
it was clear as a bell, clear as anybody watching that game, that clearly he was hurt. And it
affected his running, Dan. It affected his passing. You could see he's been very accurate all year, and you could just see it wasn't working. He was scaring the Seahawks defense at all, either running the ball or passing the ball at that point. But to me, look, this is the point everybody's talking about, but I think the more important story and the more important thing we need to question about the coaching staff has actually been overlooked by a lot of people. To me, the biggest point and the biggest reason we lost this match was not something that Mike Shanahan did, but a guy named Kyle Shanahan, his son, who, look, we've praised him. He's deserved it. He's done a great job designing the offense this year. But
this year, yeah.
But when you have the NFL's second leading rusher, and you only give him 16 carries after he rushed for 200 yards the previous week against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
And I know they're better, but that was the biggest downfall of the Redskins. They passed the ball way too much. And, look, RG3 is a great passer, but the guy was injured too, so you'd think they would lean on the running game a little more.
He didn't have
the option play really available. But
and his stats were not that good. He was 10 for 19, 84 yards passing, you know. 2 touchdown passes early, and then an INT later in the game.
Look at this. So people attribute a lot of the rushing success of the Redskins to the option play, and I understand that helps Alfred Morris out. It makes things maybe a little easier on him. But Alfred Morris didn't get all those yards on the option play. There was plenty of just straight up, you know, running back designed runs that he tore up all year. He was the second leading rusher in the NFL. Okay, 16 carries is not enough for a guy who just had 200 on the ground. To me, I don't understand Kyle Shanahan's play calling, maybe even a little bit arrogant at times. And, look, I'll give the guy credit for what he did throughout the year, but when it mattered the most, when you're in the playoffs, how can you make such bad decisions?
Perhaps. The only lame excuse I can come up with is perhaps, you know, from the scouting reports that, you know, the run defense that Seattle had was better than Dallas's a week before when, you know, Alfred Morris ran through Dallas like a freight train. The only thing I could think of. But that's really stupid, especially when your quarterback gets injured. Yeah, then you need to rely on your running back who has played phenomenal this year. I mean, Alfred Morris was named on the All-Pro team.
We beat the Cowboys in the first place. RG3 didn't have a ton of passing yards in that game either.
Yeah.
And look, Dallas' defense, okay, is not even close to as good as the Seahawks' defense. I get that, okay? The Seahawks' rushing defense isn't terrible. I think they finished 10th in the league in rushing defense. But that's is an elite defense, but the strength of that team is their secondary with their physical and quick cornerbacks, okay? And I don't get it. You know, why would you choose with an injured quarterback and with, you know, the knowledge that you're going against one of the best secondaries in the NFL, choose to attack more via the air? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, Kyle Shanahan
part of defense, but I would have to say that their rushing defense isn't as strong as their secondary. So I don't get it.
This is the same Kyle Shanahan who had a deep fascination or crush or whatever the hell you want to call it with John Beck, and the guy sucked. You know, but Kyle Shanahan believed that this guy was going to be the greatest, you know, quarterback ever or something. And the guy was awful. So, I mean, you know, I don't know where Kyle Shanahan's head is sometimes.
Yeah, and there's been talk this year. He could be a future head coach. And who knows if he just wants to hang around and maybe take the Redskins job once Shanahan Sr. retires. But I don't know. I think that the play calling in that game – with an injured quarterback and the second leading rusher in the NFL and not leaning on this guy, I think it hurts him a little bit.
We need to talk about the RG3, the injury thing, because they – and, I living in the D.C. area. I know you're in Russia. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of, you know, sports radio this week in the D.C. area. Man, they are blasting Shanahan left and right. And I think the responsibility does fall on Mike Shanahan because he's the head coach of the team.
Kyle's the play caller, though.
Well, that's true. But I'm talking about with RG3's injury. Okay, as far as should he have gone back in or not. You know, that's the decision by the head coach. I don't care what, you know, a 22-year-old player is always going to tell you, coach, I can play. Because that's what players do. Players want to play. They don't want to come out of a game. You know, especially.
He's got to admire the toughness, but he's got
to
be smart.
And, you know, Mike Shanahan's job is to listen to the doctors and the trainers and say, you know, coach, he's hurt. He probably shouldn't go back in. This is a mistake. And he didn't do that. That was very irresponsible on Mike Shanahan. And foolish to put him back in the game, clearly, when he was hurt.
Well, the team doctor did I think, give him, I believe, the go-ahead, but or at least didn't say he had to come out of the game medically. But you're right, Dan, because not only did it cost the team in the short term that I just don't think he was as effective as Kirk Cousins could have been in that moment. I'm not saying Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback, but we've seen what Kirk Cousins can do. It's not like this guy has been untested. He was, you know, he didn't play a lot, but he was very good when he did play in the regular season. And a healthy Kirk Cousins is better than a one-legged RG3. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And, but it's not only the short term, Dan, it's the long term. I mean, you know, it seems like he'll be okay, but he might miss training camp now, which means he doesn't get all that time to practice the offense even more. This hurts the long term as well. And RG3 himself has got to be a little smarter. I understand, tough guy, and he plays aggressively. I like that, but he's got to be able to get out of bounds more. He's got to be able to slide. He's taking too many hits. And it is a fair point that if the guy keeps taking hits like this, he's not going to have a very long career.
Yeah, and RG3 had surgery last Wednesday. Dr. James Andrews, who is one of the best arthroscopic surgeons in the entire world, every major athlete, if they got a knee problem, pretty much goes to Dr. James Andrews. Repaired Griffin's lateral, collateral, and anterior cruciate ligaments. Yeah, he'll be out for, what is it, like 6 to 11, 7 months or so?
It's going to be a while. But look, let's move off the offensive side of things. Let's talk about the defense.
Okay.
The blitzing worked against Tony Romo and the Cowboys. It didn't really work against the Seahawks. Haslett had his team blitzing left and right. I understand it because they don't really have a pass rush with – you know, the front three they have right now, with missing Adam Carriker and missing also your linebacker and Arakpo, who's probably the best pass rusher on the team.
Yeah.
So you had to send a few extra guys in blitz. I get that, but it wasn't working. Russell Wilson was able to pick that blitzing scheme apart. And bottom line is, we said it earlier on the show, they need to address this, the issues with the defense. Certainly they played a lot better down the stretch. You got to give them some credit, but I think we obviously need help in the secondary. You know, the pass rush isn't good, but the secondary got burned way too much this year. And in the end, when you have a good secondary, that improves your pass rush because if the secondary is able to cover better, the quarterback can't get rid of the ball as quick, and then you give your guys more time to close in on the quarterback. Getting Arakpo back healthy will be huge. Carriker as well, though I don't think it's as big of a deal as having Arakpo. But I think they've definitely got to address that defense. The secondary and maybe another defensive lineman who's a legitimate pass rusher, because they're asking too much out of that defense when you're giving the quarterback all day to throw the football.
Yeah, and so, they got it. I'm definitely think D'Angelo Hall, good riddance. I mean, goodbye. Get rid of him. He's been a bum. And I've never been a big fan of his anyway. I think he has a bad attitude. I think, you know, he gets burned a lot. He runs his mouth. He talks trash. You know, he's an idiot. And, you know, I say the sooner we get rid of him, the better this team's going to be, you know.
We certainly don't have a true shutdown corner on this team. So I think the secondary is the top priority, but I think we can also upgrade on the defensive line as well. So we'll see what they do in the offseason defensively.
Well, and you got to remember that the future of London Fletcher is uncertain. He hasn't announced whether he'll be back, or he's contemplating retirement, allegedly. And so if he retires, that's a big hole to fill there. Then you got to replace him with
Year. He still played at a very high level. Pro Bowl alternate this year, almost a slap in the face. He wasn't elected to the Pro Bowl because
I'll say he is one of the most underrated players in the NFL. We talk about Tony Romo being one of the most overrated players. London Fletcher, definitely one of the most underrated players in the NFL, and, you know, consistently plays well year after year and gets, you know, little to no respect or little to no, you know, kudos for it by most of the NFL elitists or the sports media elitists out there.
And he may not be as, I don't know, like a fiery speech giver as Ray Lewis, but he's also a guy who makes players around him better, and he's the quarterback of that defense. I mean, he gets things set up. He's kind of an extra coach on the field in addition to being a great player.
I think he's vocal, but he doesn't make a big thing about it. Like, he's vocal to guys in the locker room, and, you know.
He's cool, but he's a lead by example kind of guy.
Lead by example, exactly.
So, all right, well, let's move off the game. It's, like I said, in the end, it was sad, but I think we got a lot more out of Redskins football this year than many expected. One more piece of Redskins news, Dan, and it's also very sad. After over 30 years, the Hoggets, a crucial part of the Redskins' 12th man, have decided to hang up their pig snouts and dresses, and they'll be sorely missed. And our buddy Tim DeLisi commented on Facebook that he was a little bit shocked that the team decided to hang it up after the team is finally looking like they're turning the tables on their fortune and heading into good times. So a little bit surprising. I posted a question on Facebook to Redskins fans. How can we fill the void left by this great part of our culture, tradition, and fan base? And I wasn't saying that we can replace them, but just to fill that emptiness that's now unfortunately there. Tim DeLisi also said, look, you can't replace them. I agree, but maybe we need a new group. So if you have any ideas for Redskins to, you know, we had a great tradition of, you know, fans like the Hoggets, Super Skin. We got RG3 Woman now, and, you know, the Smurfs, the Hogs on the actual field, the Posse. We've had just a great number of nicknames and fans. And any ideas for a new kind of fan supergroup, email us, dmvsportswire@gmail.com.
Yeah, it's very sad to see them retire. I mean, they were certainly, you know, they were great, you know, dedicated fans of the Redskins. I remember meeting a couple of them one time at an event a long time ago at a bar when I was a kid. And, you know, they were friendly guys. They did a lot of charity work, like, you know, with helping raise. They would show up to events to help raise money for, like, cancer research and other things as well. You know, I don't know what happened to them. I think they kind of became I feel like after Dan Snyder bought the team, maybe they weren't as valued as much. Knowing Snyder the way he is, that's probably true. You know, that's just my feeling about them anyway. But it's very sad to see them retire. I mean, they, you know, and you know, maybe there'll be a new group of the Hoggets in the future. Maybe somebody will take the ball and run with that, and, you know, start it like the new Hoggets or something. You know,
I'm not sure if I like that idea. I think
you don't like that idea.
Well, I just like you said, you can't replace Ray Lewis. You can't replace the Hoggets. It would feel a little contrived to me. I would say we need a new idea, a new group. So that's why we need to rack our brains, come up with something. Or hey, you listeners out there, let us know. What do you think is a potential future super fan group for the Washington Redskins? Any ideas? So,
I mean, one thing about DC United is great is the Bar Brava, you know? It would be great if the Redskins had something similar to a Bar Brahma. But, something like that. You know, throwing big-ass tailgate parties before the game. You pay a monthly membership. I mean, people that are, season ticket holders or whatever. It's a shame there isn't something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move off the pigskin for now. We at least have another Ravens game to talk about next week. Let's talk about some good news. The Washington Capitals will actually be playing this year as the NHL finally came to a labor agreement. And, look, who knows, I think the both sides, the players and the owners, had something to say, some contributing piece to this issue in the offseason. But I put it more on the owners, and I'm just glad to see they finally got things done. And I hope they learn from this, because I do think they're going to lose some fan support and not make the same mistake a third time, or would it be a fourth time, possibly.
Mm-hmm. And Ted Leosis released a statement on the Capitals' website. We are extremely excited that the National Hockey League has reached a tentative collective bargaining agreement with the Players Association, pending the final approval on both sides. This is certainly welcome news for all of us fans, players, corporate partners, local businesses, broadcasting right holders, media staff owners, and especially our plan holders have created such fantastic Verizon Center atmosphere. Thank you to all of your patience, support, and understanding during this process. We will continue to be in touch with more information becomes available. So, that's Ted Leosis. Hockey's back in Washington. Thank God.
Yeah, and I'm kind of saying that I'm not thrilled with the owners right now, but I really don't know what Ted Leosis' part in this was, but I like the guy. I like our owner, and hopefully he'll turn the Wizards franchise around. It's certainly going to be a very short NHL season. I think it's only going to end up being, 3 months?
Yeah, it's definitely a shortened season. I think it resumes on the 19th, so it's a couple days from now, the first game. I don't know if they've released the schedule of who the Caps are playing yet. Maybe tomorrow, hopefully, or this week.
Well, I think the agreement is still tentative, so until they formally sign everything, it's pretty much going to mean that they can't really release the schedule.
It's funny. I was talking to people about, them coming back, and it's like, well, are they going to get the players back, Ovechkin's in Moscow or whatever? Well, as soon as this deal was announced on Saturday, Ovechkin was back in town on Monday. There was a picture of him on Facebook and the Capitals website of him, walking out off the plane at Dulles Airport. So that answers that question. They're all coming back. So that's good.
Very excited about that. And,
yeah.
Hey, look, who knows? We've never won the hockey. We've won in baseball in the DMV area. We've won in football. We've won in soccer. We've won in basketball only once, I believe. But never won in hockey. So who knows? Maybe the strike shortened season. This could be the year. Who knows? Redskins won here when the season. Well, it wasn't shortened. I guess it was shortened. They had replacement players. Eventually, the real players came along. But the Redskins won the Super Bowl during that year.
And it will be interesting to see how Adam Oates does as the head coach of the Capitals. I mean, he was a grimy, hard-nosed player for the Caps, kind of the way Ben Olsen was for DC United. Hopefully he will bring that kind of intensity as a coach that he brought as a player, and that's worked well for United, with Ben Olsen. So maybe the Caps will have a similar success, hopefully.
Yeah, and looking at the team, we still got a lot of good talent. You got Ovi, you got Backstrom, you got Marcus Johansson returning. I still think this team maybe could do a little more upgrading at the offensive side of things. But we'll see what happens. And look, they have a great farm system with Hershey.
And a few years ago we used to talk about how the Caps defense was bad and the offense was great, and then of course we saw kind of a decline in the offense. And
No more Sjoman. No more Alexander Sjoman.
Yeah.
And which, by the way, Russians have told me it's actually pronounced Sjoman, believe it or not. So.
Yeah. So it's good that hockey's back, and we'll definitely talk more about it as when the season actually gets going. And it was funny. I was at the grocery store on Saturday. Yesterday I was buying stuff for the Ravens game, and I saw a lot of people rocking their Caps gear. So at the store. So I think people are definitely very excited that hockey's back in Washington. So,
yeah, and like I said, I think the NHL was very stupid for having this labor strike because, both sides really in the end. Because we saw what happened to the game the last time they had a strike, and certainly Well, hockey has never been as popular, I think, overall as baseball, basketball, or football. And, you know, it really hurt them even, you know, really hurt their
it could, I think
it really hurt the fan interest in the league yeah. the first time around, and it took them several years to get back on track. And you know, right when the sport was starting to make some headway and really improve in overall interest and quality, they go ahead and do something stupid like this. But I'm just glad they were.
I think in some areas you'll see that where a team, because especially if their basketball team's doing well, then they may not be as happy about their hockey team coming back. But in Washington, that's not the case because the Wizards are not generating any interest of any kind or very little. So people are definitely happy that the Caps are coming back. So I don't think the Caps have to worry about that as much as other teams will. So,
well, speaking of the Washington Wizards, Dan.
Yes.
We didn't think it was quite possible, but it finally happened. The Washington Wizards have officially won two games in a row, and I'm impressed. One game was against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Wizards now have 6 wins on the year, 6-28. Still, you know, a terrible situation to be in, but they've now beat the Miami Heat and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And as much as I want to give the Wizards credit, and it was a close game, one on a buzzer-beating shot by Bradley Beal, I have to kind of put some of this on the Thunder, saying that, look, I think they were playing a terrible team. And we know this happens in sports. Sometimes teams play down to the level of their competition or don't, I don't know, get up for games against teams they think they're, you know, supposed to walk all over. So maybe they just weren't as motivated as they normally were. Mm-hmm. The Oklahoma City Thunder. So, you know, I want to give credit to the Wizards, but I think they also just kind of didn't play with their normal intensity, Oklahoma City. So I think they kind of expected a win and maybe didn't have their full energy on hand.
And then, of course, they won last night. I did not watch the game, unfortunately, because where I was at watching the Ravens game, there was no interest in watching the Wizards game. But they won 93-83, and John Wall's big return was last night.
8 points coming off the bench and 4 assists. Certainly good to see him back, and he looked pretty sharp.
Mm-hmm. And
very very good overall team effort. You got 15 points out of Webster, 10 points from Okafor. You know, always know he's very solid on the defensive end of things. Bradley Beal had 16 points. AJ Price had 16 points. So and everybody really pitched in a good full team effort.
Yeah, and it looks like Jordan Crawford's out with an injury. So,
yeah,
that's unfortunate because I really think that's what the key is. When we get Crawford back healthy, I think Wall and Crawford really need to just become like a dynamic duo and just start, you know, dominating. I think that's what could turn this around, in my opinion, that, you know, Crawford's great. Wall's good. We know what Wall can do. Maybe the two of them, when they finally are on the court together, we'll see what, you know, we'll see things turn around, I hope.
Well, look, I like those two guys. I think Bradley Beal is only going to get better. He's kind of been up and down, but he's a rookie. You know, you expect him to go through these growing pains. And you look at the big men on the team. Okay, John Wall's obviously a little bit of an injury concern because it's not like it's only been this year. He's had some history of injuries, I think, even going back to college. Jordan Crawford's, you know, been injured now. You got Nene, the big man, who's, I think, a great pickup, but he's also got injury issues, and he's had them periodically throughout his career as well. So you got a number of key players who are just kind of up in the air if they can consistently play for the team based on injury history. So that's a concern, but, and it's a big but because these guys do have this history, if they can stay healthy, you got a great big man in Nene. You got Emeka Okafor, who's fantastic defensively and can contribute a little bit offensively. You throw in John Wall, who is the engine that makes the team run. I really like Jordan Crawford. I think he's only going to get better as well. You got the young young pinpoint shooter in Bradley mm-hmm. Beal. And you got guys like Trevor Booker, who's also injured this year, but I like what I see out of him as a guy off the bench. A lot of hustle, solid defensively, pull down a bunch of rebounds when he does play. Certainly has an ability to score in the low post. I like the progress I've seen from Kevin Serafin. I think they're one consistent big man shy, one solid low post goal basket score. And if they can get that, and they probably will have a very high draft pick, You know, I like Seraphin and Booker, but to me they seem more like bench players.
Mm.
They'll be very good contributors to the team, I think. But if we can get a legit starter, either through free agency or the draft, as a low post scorer, and hope that Nene, Crawford, and Wall can stay healthy, I wouldn't go so far as to say this is a playoff team next year. Certainly they're not going to be a playoff team this year. But something tells me, and maybe this is a bold prediction, but 2 years from now, I think this team can make the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with that, with the way things, you know, with what they got and what the potential is there to happen. Of course, it all has to, you know, has to gel, and it has to happen, you know. And guys got to stay
healthy.
And guys got to stay healthy and not get injured. Injuries is what kills that, you know, that progress. Or that
they got to stay healthy. I think they need to add a little depth on the mm-hmm. team and just continue to hope that players like Seraphin and Beal stay on the same pace of progress.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not, you know, super bright and happy times as a Washington Wizards fan, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I really
yeah.
can.
So.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Washington Nationals, Dan.
Yeah.
Huge signing this week, or should I say re-signing of, you know, certainly the team's MVP offensively, led the team with 100 RBIs and 30-plus home runs, Adam LaRoche.
Mm-hmm.
Re-signed with the Washington Nationals. The big point that stuck up this deal happening earlier was the fact that LaRoche wanted a 3-year deal. The Nats were not willing to offer any more than a 2-year deal. Ended up being a 2-year contract with a club and player mutual option for a 3rd year. Certainly glad to see this deal get done. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good deal, and you know, $24 million guaranteed, I guess. Includes a $10 million first year, $12 million second, and a $2 million buyout option for 2015 from either side. So, I mean, yeah, Adam LaRoche has definitely contributed to the success of last season. And, I'm glad they brought him back. I'm glad he's coming back. I heard that Mike Rizzo kind of told him, said, look, Adam, basically said to him, hey, this is the deal. This is what it is, you know, come on. And I guess LaRoche was like, all right, fine, I'll come back.
Look, in the end, the team certainly wanted him. Adam LaRoche really seemed to want to be back here. I mean, I think any player can be happy. In the past, you know, the Nationals weren't necessarily a valued destination for players. But, you know, this is a team that should contend for a World Series for, you know, several years to come now. I mean, they've got it set up to do this. And, you know, who wouldn't want to come back to a team that, you feel comfortable with and, you know, seem to have a good locker room chemistry, and a team that, you know, finished last year with the best record in baseball and has certainly potential to win a World Series in the near future. I mean, why wouldn't he?
And the talent pool, is playing with Ryan Zimmerman, Jason Worth,
Ian Desmond,
Bryce Harper, Ian Desmond. Steven Strasburg. I mean, this is a lights out team, and why would LaRoche want to leave that, even if he goes somewhere else for more money, to a team that may not be as good, you know?
And look, like I said, he's a standout guy in the locker room. Fantastic, in my mind, the best defensive first baseman in all of baseball. Winner of the Gold Glove this year, and you know, very key part of the offense. A guy who's got a lot of power. You know, there was talk last offseason maybe the Nationals are going to sign Prince Fielder. I can't tell you how glad I am that we kept LaRoche, because, okay, maybe Fielder's got a little more pop in his bat than LaRoche, but Adam LaRoche is a 30 home run, 100 RBI guy. I don't think you need that much more, and certainly night and day a better defensive player than Prince Fielder. I guess the backup option was to have Michael Morris and Tyler Moore platoon at first base. A lot of pundits have pretty much said, okay, look, if they re-sign LaRoche, Michael Morse will get traded. Well, Rizzo has come out and said, look, not so fast. No one's got a gun to our head. No one's forcing us to trade Michael Morse. He basically said, unless the deal makes sense for the Nats and is a really good deal for the team, they have no reason to trade Morse. And I agree. I think what I've read is that they're looking for pitching prospects, which shows the Nats continue. What I like about the Nats is, look, they've built through the farm system, and the Castens have done this before with the Braves, you know, made a team good for just, you know, over a decade. They've got one of the best farm systems in baseball now. They've got a good young team, most of it that's been brought up through our minor league system. So we're good in the present, but we're also set up to continue to churn out solid players from, you know, single A, double A, triple A. It looks like this team could be set up not only for, you know, the next several years, but perhaps for a decade or more. We've got a great farm system. We're being smart in free agency. And the fact that we're asking for pitching prospects proves that we're dedicated to improving the most important part of any baseball team, which is the pitching staff. So they've always got their eye out for that. And, hey, if we don't get the pitching prospects we want, why not keep Michael Morse?
Yeah.
We know that injuries happen in sports, and he's certainly a guy who could spell a Roche at first base. It's not like the three outfielders we got in Span, Harper, and Worth are going to play every game. You're going to need someone to step in every now and then. So you throw in Morse and Tyler Moore, you know, maybe once or twice a week to spell these guys. And, you know, one of the big keys for the Nats last year was not only the pitching staff, but the fact that we were good all around as a team. We had reliable guys coming off the bench who could hit, who could play defense. And, okay, maybe Morse isn't that great defensively, but we know this guy's got power in his bat, so why not keep him?
Yeah.
So good stuff for the Nats. And I guess our last piece of news for the day, Dan, DC United signed a 20-year-old Brazilian player, Rafael Stryker, to a young designated player contract. And from everything I've read, they've got a lot of hope for this guy. Now, it's only a one-year loan, but he is going to be with the team, and he's a guy who's played for the Brazilian youth teams. He played for Brazil for the Pan American Games, and DC United said they had some guys with a little more notoriety who were on their radar as a potential striker, but they thought the upside with this guy was just too good to pass up, and a young Brazilian striker who's coming into his prime. I'm pretty excited about it. This frees up Chris Pontius. I'm sorry, I think there's a possibility Pontius might start as a striker, but you got Rafael, you got Chris Pontius, Dwayne De Rosario, Nick De Leon. This is shaping out to be a pretty good attack for DC United.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know what to expect from Rafael, but they were fantastic last year, and you just add one more attacking piece. I'm thinking good times ahead for DC United for a second year in a row.
And how exciting will it be at RFK Stadium? More Brazilian fans show up, but that would be kind of cool. Especially those very – a lot of nice-looking Brazilian women to look at. I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, sorry. Down boy.
we got Rafael. We've got another player named Rafael Augusto in the midfielder, and another midfielder in Marcelo Saragossa. So three Brazilians on the team. I see no reason why we wouldn't get a few more Brazilian fans.
DC United's ladies' night's going to look a little better next year. So.
Yeah. And this is Todd Dedding Warrington in the reentry draft. This is the first big move made under the Dave Castor manager, as he's taken over you know, the personnel department since the departure of Kevin Payne to TFC. So good to see that they're not only going for, you know, a lot of people joke and say MLS is a retirement league, going for some, I don't know, aging star from Europe, but actually digging into South America and signing a young guy, or, well, not really signing him, getting him on loan, but a 20-year-old. So this is not, you know, bringing in some 34-year-old that's to finish out his days in the United States playing soccer.
You got to pay $1 million a year to, or whatever, you know, to bring him in as a novelty act.
It's a young Brazilian guy. We know, Dan, how much talent Brazil has. It's not easy to get onto the Brazilian national team.
No, I mean, they're one of the greatest historically one of the greatest national teams in soccer. I mean, you know, Pele. Obviously, you know, the legend, you know, the greatest soccer player ever. And many people would say that anyway. I guess you could have, you know, that debate. So, and the Brazilian league is very excited. I used to watch a lot of it on Gol TV, and those games were fast paced, and, you know, fans are pretty wild down there. And I'm excited about this guy. This should be good. So
Vamos United.
Yeah.
And I guess.
There's one more thing I wanted to discuss.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Well, with the Orioles, I mean, well, it has to do with Rafael Palmeiro. You know, they did the Hall of Fame vote this week, or last week, I should say, for, you know, the Hall of Fame baseball. Nobody got in. You know, you had Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Sammy Sosa all eligible. None of them made it in. because the writers are all still, you know, ticked off at them for, you know, the steroids and everything. But Rafael Palmeiro, you know, he's been eligible for a couple of years now, and his voting went down. He got, like, the least amount of votes, 8.8% of the vote, 850 votes. And, you know, it's just a shame, I guess, that, you know, this generation of baseball, you know, our generation of baseball has been tainted by this performance and, you know, performance-enhancing drug scandals, and these guys aren't going to the Hall of Fame.
I got to ask, do you think, okay, obviously right now, you know, these guys are not being looked favorably upon because of what they've done in the past, but do you think there's a point down the road where people just kind of accept it? Look, a lot of people in this era did use steroids. There's probably a lot we still don't know about.
Yeah.
And eventually get into the Hall of Fame because, I don't know, I think some people suspect that, you know, they'll eventually be a little bit vindicated. And not that people will say it was right, but kind of say, look, that was just part of that era of baseball, and there's still a chance for these guys in the future when it's not still kind of fresh in our minds. Possibility to get into the Hall of Fame. What do you think about that, Dan?
I think that it bothers me that these guys, you know, that as professional athletes that we looked up to as kids, that, you know, we always believed that the guys did things the right way, and it turns out they didn't. You know, they used shortcuts to get to stay competitive and stay in the game longer, and took drugs, and it does bother me. But on the other hand, I have heard the argument that a steroid doesn't hit a baseball. You know, that the person still hit the ball, the person still had to make the play, you know. So, I don't know what to, you know, I don't, you know, I know that the writers will not forgive these guys for a long time. So, guys like Bonds, Clemens, McGuire, Rafael Palmeiro, Sammy Sosa will not go into the Hall of Fame for, you know, this could go on for 5, 6, 7, 10 years for if they ever get in, you know.
Yeah, and look, I understand what you're saying, too, because, look, you know, the steroids, I think they add a little bit of strength, of course. I mean, it helps with muscle building. So maybe it adds, you know, I don't know, 50 yards or something to the ball you're hitting sometimes. But you still got to hit the ball well. It's not like, you know, you still got to make contact on the right part of the bat. You still got to have – well, I suppose it does help your bat speed a little bit, too, if you're a little stronger. But in the end, I think the most important thing that steroids – not important, but – I don't want to make it sound positive, but the key reason for using steroids, more so than adding strength, is to help you recover from injury.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these guys might, you know, with Bonds, it helped them continue to play the game. I'm not, you know, excusing it, but I think more so than improving your performance, which it does to a small degree, I think it just helped some of these guys stay on the field a little bit longer than they would have had without using.
Yeah, I remember getting my heart broken with Rafael Palmeiro, though, about the steroids. It was 2005. I was at the beach with my brother, with my family. Rafael Palmeiro had just gotten his 3,000th hit. I remember telling my brother, I said, Rafael Palmeiro stands for everything that is good about baseball, you know? And then, of course, a week later it came, you know, because he did the finger point in front of Congress where he said, take steroids. He did the Bill Clinton thing. And then, of course,
that just made him look even worse.
And he came out, he failed a drug test, and he, you know, he tested positive, and he tried to say it was B12 that Miguel Tejada had shot up into him or something. And, it just tainted me. And I never looked at Rafael Palmeiro the same. And, you know, it's funny. I remember going to a fan festival. I think it was the year after the Orioles fan festival year after that. And I bought a Brian Roberts thing to try to get signed by Brian Roberts. And in the packet, there was a Rafael Palmeiro picture behind it. And I said, what's this doing in here? And I said to the vendor, I said, I didn't want this Palmeiro thing. Did you guys put this in a mistake? What's it? They go, we're giving it away. Nobody wants them. So it was, you know.
Jeez. And you're funny, you talk about Brian Roberts. He was another guy who got caught up in the steroid scandal. I remember you used to yell B-roid at Orioles games.
Well, you know, when I laid off him, you know, I think that eventually, you know, I think he learned his lesson. I don't think he did it very often. I think he's very embarrassed by it. You know, I believe that a man can change and deserves a second chance. And, you know, so I don't call Brian Roberts B-roid anymore. So.
Fair enough. And look, you know, to me, I guess the three things that stick out the most during the steroids era for me are Rafael Palmeiro's finger point, which we all, you know, found out later was a total bunch of BS.
Yeah.
Roger Clemens just looking ridiculous, saying, "Oh, I think Andy Pettit misremembered." Just incredibly stupid. And then, and look, you know, as much as the whole Rafael Palmeiro thing has made me lose respect for him, I never. I had respect for Roger Clemens, I guess, as a player, but he always came across as kind of a
yeah,
D-bag
sure.
to me.
Yeah, so. Not a nice guy. And Bonds wasn't a nice guy. That's part of the problem, I think. That's what really is why the steroid thing got blown open. These guys were jerks. They weren't nice to the fans, and they weren't nice to reporters. And because they kicked reporters off and were jerks to them, that's why the reporters started digging into their lives. And the, you know, and what's, you know, and I think that's what happened. Be nice to the reporters, you know?
Well, and the third thing I was going to say, Dan, was in regards to Barry Bonds with his ridiculous the cream and the clear. You remember that?
Yeah,
I was just taking the cream and the clear.
Yeah, right. Oh,
so. Well, all right. Well, that'll do it for this week, Dan. Any other final thoughts on the issue at hand?
You know, excited that the Ravens got one more shot. Excited that hockey's coming back. John Wall is back. You know, things are looking so far not bad for 2013. The RG3 thing is pretty bad. Hopefully he'll recover from that. But, you know, right now, feeling pretty good about the state of sports in the DMV area.
Absolutely. So don't forget to keep an eye out on the Capitol schedule to see when that season starts.
Yeah.
Ravens have their matchup with, well, we'll find out soon enough, next weekend. And the Wizards have a chance to go for... Dare we say it, Dan? Three in a row. Monday, hosting the Orlando Magic. So let's go, Wizards.
Yes.
All right. In the meantime, goodbye, DC. Goodbye, Maryland. And goodbye, Virginia.
Goodbye.